Hello and welcome to Habemus Papam, episode 32, St. Miltiades.
Dear brothers and sisters, annuncio vobis.
Annuncio vobis.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum.
Gaudium magnum.
Gaudium magnum.
Habemus Papam.
How's it going, everyone? And I want to start this episode by apologizing. I am thinking I'm pronouncing this close to right. St. Miltiades, Miltiades, Miltiades. That's what it looks like to me. But we're going to have to just go with it. St. Miltiades was originally from the Roman province of Africa. And we believe that he served as a presbyter, as a priest, under the previous popes, going all the way back to Pope St. Marcellinus and the beginning of the Diocletian persecution. He was elected pope in 311, after a fairly long period in which there was no bishop of Rome, beginning with the exile and death of St. Eusebius, if you remember from last episode. Now, his election corresponded with massive changes in the greater political climate of Rome, and especially the relationship between the Roman Empire and the church. Now, I'm going to get a little bit into the weeds about this, because it's a fascinating story, it's really important, this is a big turning point in our narrative. And so we're going to really kind of see what actually happened. If you remember from, a couple episodes back, the emperor in Rome was named Maxentius, but he was really one of four emperors. There was the famous tetrarchy built by Diocletian. Galerius and Maximinus Daya were the emperors in the east, and Maxentius and Constantine were the emperors in the west. And to top it all off, there was a fifth guy in the mix, a man named Licinius, who was appointed emperor of the West by Galerius when Maxentius seized control of Rome. So Maxentius isn't, necessarily legitimate, but Licinius isn't really legitimate. So Maxentius at this point was facing the possibility of war on several fronts, the most prominent being with Constantine and with Licinius. Now, both Licinius and Constantine were really popular with Christians. Constantine especially. He was extremely popular with Christians. And that's both because his mother, St. Helena, was a Christian, but also because of his own opposition to the persecution of Christians. Maxentius, then, he's going to be worried that in a war with Constantine or Licinius, the Christians within his own realm are going to turn on him and desert and go to the other side. So, in an attempt to kind of curry favor with the Christians in his area that he controlled, he allowed the appointment of a new bishop in Rome. And on top of all that, he instructed that the property taken during the persecutions be returned to the Christian community. So this is how we get this election of a new pope, St. Miltiades, because Maxentius wants to kind of make it up to the Christians. At the same time, Galerius in the east is beginning to realize that the persecutions of the Christians there just wasn't working as he had hoped, and so he too will cease the persecution and give the church some peace. But while this is all a nice gesture, it's not going to be enough to stop Constantine. Now, we really have to kind of talk about him a little bit more about him himself. If you remember, Constantine was the son of Constantius Chlorus, who was the emperor of the West, and St. Helena. And by the saint in her name, we know that she's a Christian. And a couple episodes back, we talked about how Constantine returned to his father's side in 305 after being a hostage, basically, in the court of Galerius. And then he himself was declared emperor in 306. So now it's 311. Galerius died, and so there's a power vacuum in the east, which is going to lead to civil war. Maximinus Daya seized control of the east immediately. And that prompted Licinius to turn east and try and counter him, which then prompted Maxentius to attack north towards Constantine because he figures, okay, I've got the time, I've got the chance, this is the time. So Constantine retaliates, and he invades Italy in 312, and he defeats Maxentius' forces in Turin and Verona, and now he can kind of, the road is cleared, he can head towards Rome. And so now we arrive at the famous, though admittedly historically murky, scene. It's the evening of October 27th, 312, and Constantine's preparing for a battle in front of Rome, and he seems to have had a dream or a vision of some sort. We've got two accounts of it historically. One is from a historian named Lactantius, and the other is from Eusebius. So Lactantius writes, "Constantine was directed in a dream to cause the heavenly sign to be delineated on the shields of his soldiers, and so to proceed with battle. He did as he had been commanded, and he marked on their shields the letter Chi, which is an X, with a perpendicular line drawn through it, and turned round thus at the top, being the cipher of Christ. Having this sign, his troops stood into arms. Now Eusebius' story is a bit more dramatic. He writes that Constantine said that about noon, when the day was already beginning to decline, he saw with his own eyes the trophy of a cross of light in the heavens, above the sun, and bearing the inscription, "Conquer by this," in hoc signo vinces in Latin. At this sign, he was himself struck with amazement, and his whole army also, which followed him on this expedition and witnessed the miracle. Now, both of these stories are probably exaggerated. We don't really know how much to believe. Constantine, right after the battle, didn't seem to, you know, play up this heavenly experience quite as much. But afterwards, he wanted to portray himself as the quintessential Christian emperor, and he wanted to really clothe his reign in the trappings of Christian miracles, and so he had a reason to kind of play up this story. So regardless of what actually happened, Constantine did somehow incorporate the Christian symbol, the Cairo, into his army, and he won a massive battle against Maxentius at the Milvian Bridge, just outside of Rome. So Constantine then entered the city in triumph, and this is something really important. Instead of immediately sacrificing at the Temple of Jupiter, which is the custom when you enter the city in triumph, Constantine separated himself from pagan culture. He did not immediately convert to Christianity, but he did officially grant Christians legal status, and he didn't sacrifice to the pagan gods. In February of 313, Constantine met with Licinius at Milan, and the two of them issued the famous Edict of Milan, which gave Christians official freedom to worship and full legal status throughout the empire. And the edict was directed towards Maximinus Daya in the east, who had started persecuting Christians again out there. And so they're saying, look at us, you Christians out there, we're much better emperors out here. We're going to grant you legal status. So with the Edict of Milan, we have this incredible turning point in our podcast and our story, because for the first 300 years, the popes have been relatively obscure men, fishermen, farmers, slaves even. They've been overlooked. Occasionally, they've been persecuted by the civil authorities. And to be honest, that made things tough for me, because I tried to find sources to tell us about the popes themselves, and there's only so much you can find, because they were such small potatoes in the larger Roman world. But now things are about to change, and in a big way, because something new has happened here. Most moments in history, you know, that are pivotal are often arbitrarily asserted by historians. We need a good date to say this is the end of this and the beginning of that. So we say this date or this event, but in reality, things have been changing and moving the whole time. And we can see in our history, the popes already had been growing in prestige and influence even during the persecutions, but something really new happens right now. And for better or for worse, and for my opinion, it's been a little bit of both, the church is now being supported fully and legally and openly by the emperor. So we don't have to worry as much about these persecutions. Those kind of days are behind us. But now we have a whole new worry, and that's what happens when the emperor wants to mess around with the faith. How do we work out this new relationship between pope and emperor? In Rome, however, it must have seemed to Pope Miltiades that, like, everything is awesome. Christianity is officially legal, the emperor is basically a Christian, and his mother is a Christian, and the process of, you know, recovering church property is accelerating, and everything's going great. This is awesome. This is fantastic. You know, my predecessors were hiding in the catacombs, and now the emperor himself is, you know, talking to me. Now, in around 312, Pope Miltiades was given the gift of the Lateran Palace, which had been the home of Constantine's wife, Fausta, and which would remain off and on the dwelling place of the popes for the next 1,000 years. And that's just going to be the beginning of what the emperor is going to give to the faith. But again, at the same time, we immediately see more imperial activity in regards to the content of the faith. In 312, Constantine was contacted by the Donatists in Africa to judge a case on their behalf. Now, thus far, we haven't talked too much about the Donatists, and it's high time we do so. In seminary, there was a group of guys who met every Thursday morning or Friday morning, and or on mornings with particular feast days, and they would bring donuts in. They called themselves the Donutists. Seminarian humor is not very good, but that's not what the Donutists are about. They're not about donuts. We've been flirting with the Donutists for a while. You know, they're a North African sect which sprung out of the issues surrounding the readmission of lapsed or apostate Christians back into the church. So basically, as we've seen with various persecutions, if you gave in and sacrificed to idols, could you come back to the church? The Donatists were the most rigorous, and they said that, no, you're done, you can't come back. And in fact, they thought that those who were clergy and apostatized during the persecution lost their status as clergy, and their sacraments would henceforth be invalid. Now, this comes up right now because in 311, there was a new bishop chosen in Carthage. He was a man named Caecilian, and he was consecrated by a bishop who apparently had given in during the persecutions of Diocletian. And so the Donatists are like, this guy can't be the bishop because the other guy gave in. He can't consecrate anymore. He's no longer valid. His ordinations no longer count. So they nominated instead a man named Majorinus to take the position. And, you know, now there's a conflict. There's two bishops in Carthage. So to resolve the situation, the Donatists appealed to Constantine and asked that a panel of three bishops from Gaul would take the case and judge who was the correct bishop. So Constantine passed the case on to Pope Miltiades. Eusebius gives us the text of the letter to Pope Miltiades, and it's really interesting to read a bit of it and hear the actual communication by Constantine. So this is what he writes. Constantine Augustus to Miltiades, Bishop of Rome, and to Marcus. Since many such communications have been sent to me by Anullius, the most illustrious proconsul of Africa, in which it is said that Caecilianus, bishop of the city of Carthage, has been accused by some of his colleagues in Africa in many matters. And since it seems to me a very serious thing that those provinces which divine providence has freely entrusted to my devotedness, and in which there is a great population, the multitude are found following the baser course and dividing, as it were, into two parties, and the bishops are at variance. Just a little snippet there. Pope Miltiades, you know, he took this commission, he summoned a group of bishops to meet, and they discussed the case at the Lateran Palace on October 2nd, 313. And they sided against the Donatists, saying that apostasy doesn't remove the sacrament of holy orders. And this, incidentally, is the church teaching to this day. You know, the sinfulness of a priest doesn't remove his ability to perform the sacraments. A priest is always a priest, and the sacrament makes a permanent change to his being, which enables him to carry out the sacraments of Jesus Christ. If the priest leaves the priesthood, it only means he's not permitted to celebrate the sacraments, not that he's unable. So the Donatists, however, didn't give up easily, and so they appealed this decision to Constantine. But that story's going to have to wait for another time, because in January of 314, St. Miltiades died, and he was buried in the catacombs of St. Callistus and was succeeded quickly by St. Sylvester I. And we're going to talk about him and this new Constantinian world next week. Thanks for listening to Abemus Papam. You can check out the rest of the Catholic Bites podcast at catholicbitespodcast.com or find us on iTunes. Thank you and God bless.